Right. Oh, I started recording already. Sorry. Hi, everybody.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Walk with the
Weird. We're just going to leave that like that.
Yeah. That's amazing. I think it's awesome. Outtakes are always awesome. So, welcome again to another episode. You're here with Ashley and Janice.
Yep.
So, what's been going on with you?
Not too much. We are going to, by we, I mean me, going to have a fun fact at the end of each episode. So stay tuned for that.
Nice. Yeah, tonight we actually got to watch the next episode of The Mandalorian for anyone with Disney Plus.
I would die for Baby Yoda.
I would too.
I would lay down my life for Baby Yoda.
He's so cute. Those eyes.
He's trending everywhere.
That is awesome. The fact that Baby Yoda is trending.
Hashtag Baby Yoda has been trending on Twitter.
That is amazing. And I'm pretty sure no one that was involved in the original movies thought it was going to get this big. And
no.
Stay that big for so long. Because it's been around forever now.
Yeah.
I love it. But tonight we're going to be going to Indianapolis, Indiana. Not really. We're going to be sitting here in my garage. But I'm going to be talking about a murder case that happened in Indianapolis. We're going to be talking about Sylvia Likens. This is going to be a warning right now. This does involve a child. And there are... there is going to be some explicit content in here. Unfortunately, it does involve some really... not so nice thing. So this is your warning now. So Sylvia Likens was 16 years old when she was tortured to death in Indianapolis. So we're going to talk a little bit about her and her case.
Yay!
So, like I said, her name was Sylvia Likens, Sylvia Marie Likens. She was born in 1949 in Lebanon, Indiana.
Okay.
And she died in 1965 in Indianapolis, Indiana. Her cause of death was actually listed as a subdural hematoma, shock, and malnutrition.
Okay.
According to some senior investigators for the Indianapolis Police Department, they have said it was the most sadistic case that he had ever investigated in his total 35 years on the force. And many,
wow.
Yeah, many Hoosiers today still consider this one of the worst crimes ever committed in their state. Ever. So that's, yeah. That's just showing you how bad it got. So Sylvia was the third of five children that were born to carnival workers, Lester Cecil Likens and Elizabeth Frances Likens, also known, she went by Betty.
And so you said you said the other thing was the closest we were going to get to
yes.
Clowns. We are slowly dipping our toe into getting you to talk about clowns.
Slowly, very, very, very slowly.
And then eventually we'll push you off into Gacy. Just like the video from the Misery Report.
Oh, goodness.
Push you off the cliff.
Yeah, what happened to that guy who pushed his girlfriend off the cliff?
You know what? She might have said she was breaking up with him. We don't know what happened afterwards. That's my story.
So Sylvia was actually the only single birth that Betty had. She had three pregnancies, and Sylvia was right in between two sets of twins.
Okay.
So you had the older twins, and then you had the younger twins. The older twins were, 2 years older than her. The younger ones were only a year younger than her.
Okay.
Her younger sister, Jenny, did suffer from polio. She had to wear a leg brace and she had a very noticeable limp.
Aww.
Yeah. So the family struggled. Financially, the marriage was kind of unstable. They were carnival workers. They would go, they would sell candy, sodas, beer at the carnivals. And the kids would help out with that. All except for Jenny and Sylvia. Most of the time when the family was out doing work, the girls would stay with a family member, mostly their maternal grandmother, because the education was very important to the mom and dad, and they didn't want the education to be suffered. Plus, with Jenny having polio, you know, it kind of makes it easier to have her in one place.
Yes.
So Jenny and Sylvia, they were very close because of all this. There were testimonies from their friends saying that when they were younger, Jenny and Sylvia would go to the skating rink, and Jenny would put on a skate on her one good leg, and Sylvia would hold her sister and skate around with her. So it's very sweet. It's very, very sweet. Sylvia would work odd jobs here and there, babysitting, things like that. And she would turn and give that money to her mom and her father to help support the family. So in July of 1965, Betty is arrested and jailed for shoplifting.
Okay.
And so Lester, he gets this opportunity to go and work on the East Coast. He has to figure out something to do with the girls.
Okay.
He doesn't want to take them to the East Coast, and I guess family members could not keep them this time. So he actually arranges for one of the girls' friends' mothers to care for Jenny and Sylvia. The friends' names were Paula and Stephanie, and the mother's name is Gertrude Benawoski. And I believe that's how you say it.
You've been struggling with that all day.
I really, really have. It's a Danish-American name, and so it's I don't do that.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. So Gertrude had three failed marriages. She was married to two different men. Her first husband she married twice. After her third divorce, she started dating a young man. She got pregnant. The young man split town. So by the summer of 1965, she is 36 years old. She is about 5'6", or 170 centimeters for anyone who's not in the U.S. and doesn't use our wackadaddle system.
I mean, thank you for converting that.
Yes. And she weighed about 100 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. She was described as looking very haggard, underweight. She was an asthmatic chain smoker suffering from depression from three failed marriages, a failed relationship, and a recent miscarriage. I don't know if I'd be going too all yet.
Well, you know what I mean, though.
Yeah.
The miscarriage thing is sad, regardless of anything else.
Yeah, I mean, this woman's kind of, you know, she's had a really rough life.
Yeah.
So at this point, she is living with her children. She has Paula, who is 17.
Okay.
Stephanie, who's 15. And those are Jenny and Sylvia's friends. Then she has John, who's 12. Marie, who's 11. Shirley, who's 10, James, who is 8, and Dennis Lee Wright Jr., who is only about a year old.
So she's, I mean, that's a wide range.
It is. And she's living in this tiny little house in Indianapolis.
Right.
Lester never went to the house. So he never saw that, you know, she probably couldn't handle two more children. So shortly after the 4th of July celebration, Sylvia and Jenny go to live with Gertrude and her kids. And they actually gave the address. The house is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
It's been torn down and it's now a church parking lot, but it was on East New York Street in Indianapolis.
Okay.
Lester and Gertrude had made an arrangement that he was going to pay $20 a week for the care of the girls. She in turn told Lester she would care for the girls just like they were her own daughters, that she would love them and take care of them. And for a while she did.
Right.
You know, everything was really great for the first few weeks. And then the payments started coming later and later and eventually kind of dipping off into nothing.
So Daddy was no longer sending money to help support.
Daddy could not. Yeah, they were having, he was having a hard time sending the money.
Right.
So Gertrude would respond by venting all of her frustrations out on Jenny and Sylvia. She would beat their bare butts with various instruments, including a quarter-inch thick paddle.
I mean, it's not their fault that...
No, and she would make statements as she's beating them saying, well, I took care of you two little bitches for a week for nothing. And keep in mind, they're only 16 and 15 years old, and Jenny has polio.
Right.
You know, they're away from their family. You know, they're with this woman, you know, and her girls who are supposed to be their friends.
Right.
And I think that's what makes it even worse is...
Did they have a good relationship with the other kids up till this point?
Up until this point, yes. They had a good relationship. They were often seen at Sunday school with the other children. Gertrude's house, though, was very much the house that everyone wanted to kind of go to because there really were no rules enforced.
Okay.
So kids could kind of do what they wanted.
It's one of those, I'm your friend, not your parent, sort of.
Yeah. In one specific occasion that Jenny later recounted, both the girls were beaten 15 times on the back with that quarter-inch thick paddle.
Aww.
After Paula's the eldest daughter, accused the sisters of eating too much food at a church supper that all the kids had gone to.
How do you eat too much food? Like, they bring tons. I've been to those church things. They bring a ton of food.
Yeah, there is no such thing as eating too much food at one of these. And that's why I said up until this point, you know, they had a decent relationship with these girls. And then Paula comes and says this, you know, and is kind of encouraging the beatings and things to be taking place.
Right.
So the original deal was is that the parents were supposed to be back around November of 1965.
Okay.
All right. So that's just kind of to give you a time period here.
Right.
In August of 65, for some reason, Gertrude started to focus all of her abuse onto Sylvia and less on Jenny.
So it sort of transitioned to a single target from this wider scope that we had originally.
Yeah, it focused a lot more on just Sylvia for some reason. And I've read some places that Jenny was like, you know, my sister would take those beatings for me because I couldn't handle it.
Right, which makes sense given her medical and all that.
Yeah. So, a lot based upon testimony that was given, a lot of the abuse was always done after the girls had returned to the house after going to school and on weekends.
Okay.
The initial abuse basically was the beatings and then the refusal of food. So they would basically eat leftovers or spoiled food out of garbage cans.
Aww.
At this point, this is what the girls are doing to have to survive.
Right.
on one occasion, she told Sylvia told Gertrude she had a boyfriend. Upon hearing this, Paula, who is 3 months pregnant at the time,
wow,
and her mother decide to go after Sylvia, and they kick her in the genitals, accuse her of being pregnant.
What?
Was saying that, you know, she was a whore and things of that nature. On one specific occasion, the family ate supper.
Okay.
And Gertrude and Paula and a neighborhood boy who had come over, whose name was Randy Gordon Lepper, took a hot dog and doused it in mustard and spices and force fed it to Sylvia. When she threw up, because mustard can make you throw up, they force fed her vomit back to her.
Oh.
So later, Sylvia was accused by Paula and Stephanie that she was going around the school saying that Paula and Stephanie were prostitutes. This actually made Stephanie's boyfriend physically attack Sylvia while Stephanie sat back and watched and laughed.
So, I mean, we're just bringing everybody into this now.
Yeah, we're just bringing everybody into this. It ended up, I think there was like 5 different defendants at the actual trial itself.
Wow.
On another occasion, Paula actually beat Sylvia so badly and with such force, she ended up breaking her own wrist.
Oh my gosh.
She had to go to the hospital to get it set. She was bragging about it there. And when she returned home, she beat Sylvia with the cast.
Oh my gosh.
You know, Gertrude would also try and get Jenny to hit Sylvia.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things that a lot of times we'll try and play people against each other.
Exactly. And Jenny never wanted to, but Sylvia kept telling her, no, you have to do this, you know, or they're going to do this to you. I can take it, you know, just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, so at this point, I when I was researching, I'm sitting back and I'm thinking, I don't know how I would handle that if my sister is doing all this to protect me.
Right.
I mean, that's got to be really hard to try and comprehend and to understand it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it's absolutely horrible. And of course, it gets worse.
Of course.
Of course it does. With Gertrude's active encouragement and cheering them on, several of the kids in the neighborhood would come over to beat on Sylvia.
Oh, no.
They would put cigarettes out on her. They would... they actually burned her in excess of 100 times.
Oh my goodness.
Over
the course of a period of time?
Like what they counted, I think.
Oh, that's what I mean. Like, it was over a period. It wasn't like it was 100 times.
No, it was
in
over
one
a period
episode.
Of time.
Okay.
They severely injured her genitalia.
Oh.
They would use her as a practice dummy for judo lessons.
Ow.
They would cut her. At one point, and I actually have a picture of this, because I could not believe it when I read about it, and so it's really bad. Let me see if I can get it back here. At one point, Sylvia is sleeping on a mattress on the floor. Gertrude has withdrawn her from school.
Okay.
She has...
I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean...
At this point, like...
At this point, she's basically chained up, not able to do anything.
Yeah.
There was a nurse that tried to visit to gain access to Sylvia, and Gertrude told her that Sylvia had ran away.
How?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm curious how that was going to work, sort of a thing.
Yeah, Jenny said that she didn't ever dare to mention anything that was happening in the house outside of it because Gertrude and the other children threatened her with the exact same thing.
I mean, understandable. That's not uncommon, like, for her to be afraid of that, or the union would get worse. You know, it's not like that's an uncommon fear.
Exactly. And for someone who is like Jenny, you know, and is handicapped, you know, disabled, you know, she only has one good leg. She is much weaker than her sister.
Right.
So,
and her sister's already going through all of this to try and protect her.
Exactly. So it's like, well, you know, I don't want this to happen to me. She was scared for her life at this point.
Yeah, because her sister, I mean, as bad as it sounds, her sister would have a better chance of surviving than she does at this point because of everything else.
Yeah, and they were really horrible. I mean, they had no way of contacting their parents. The abuse goes on.
This isn't like during the time of cell phones or anything.
No, it's not. It's not during the time of cell phones or anything, you know, cool like that, unfortunately.
Right.
And of course, it still gets worse.
Of course.
Gertrude started charging the kids 5 cents a piece to abuse Sylvia.
And they paid?
They paid.
Oh my goodness.
No one knew what was happening. The entire neighborhood.
Mom, I need 5 cents. Like, for what? Like, that's always my Mom, I need money. For what?
Right? That's my thing, too.
And I'm sorry. Kids are smart, but oh my gosh, they tell you everything.
Yeah.
And they remember. I mean, your kid said that your dad gets to be the first to get tripped for something that happened, I don't even know how long ago, during a game.
Yep.
Like, honestly.
Yep, they don't forget. They are, you know, yeah. And yet it still gets worse. And this is a part where it is going to be very graphic. And I apologize for this, but I do believe it's important to get all the facts of this case.
Well, I'm glad I tried to say something very lighthearted before this to cheer us up before we go down this hole.
At one point, you know, at this point, Sylvia is, you know, been beaten. She's been burned. She starts to lose control of bodily functions.
Well, she's been beaten so many times. Like,
yeah. So she acts.
Trauma.
She wets the bed one night. Gertrude is not pleased with this at all.
Okay, that you don't even have to be beat for that. Any type of abuse with a child can cause them to wet the bed.
Yeah. So she drags Sylvia out of the room. She forces her to strip in front of the other children that were there. And then they forced a Coca-Cola bottle into her in front of everyone in the family.
Oh, baby.
As she was, you know, it was all to prove that to Jenny what kind of a girl Sylvia was.
Or, you know, an act of dominance, like, let's call it what it is.
Yeah. And so she took a needle, she heated it up, she started to carve something into Sylvia's stomach area. She found it a lot harder than what she thought, so she had...
Needles aren't designed to carve.
Yes. So she had someone else carve it. And it said...
With the needle?
Yes. They scratched the words, I am a prostitute and proud of it. And I have the picture right there for you to see.
Okay, that is deep. And needles are not, like I said, needles are not made to carve or cut. Like, as someone who sews, that's not their intended purpose. That would have taken forever.
Yeah.
Like, not even mentioning, I mean, yes, it's heated, so it's burning at the same time. But that's more than just a burn welt sort of. That is like a deep cut.
Yeah. So...
And, like, nobody, like, I'm imagining screaming and nobody, like, no neighbors.
Nope.
Because, like, kid happy scream sounds very different than kid angry or kid hurt scream.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is that even in late August when Lester and Betty visited their girls, neither girls exhibited any kind of visible sign of distress or mistreatment to their parents. They never said a word to their parents.
Because the abuser tells them not to.
Yeah. Gertie was right there with the children.
Not to mention, I mean, it's like the aliens. They tell you not to tell. Not to make that weird comparison, but yeah. It is. It's the same exact
thing. It's the exact same thing. And abusers of all sorts use that. It's a power trip.
It's a power trip. It's not.
It's a tool of power that they make you feel absolutely powerless.
Or even they won't believe you. And yeah, exactly. Just don't even try because.
Exactly. It's like, well, what's the point? No one's going to believe me. And
yeah.
After their last visit, after Lester and Betty left, Gertrude actually turned to Sylvia and said, "What are you going to do now? Now they're gone."
Oh my God.
So at this point, it's now September.
Right.
The girls are able to get out and they go to a local park.
Okay.
It's there that they actually stumble across their older sister, whose name is Deanna.
Okay.
They actually confess to Deanna what is happening. They tell them all about the physical abuse, the sexual abuse, and everything like that.
Right.
Neither of them actually mentioned the actual address where they were staying at.
I mean, that would be pertinent information, but okay.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Deanna believed that her sister's claims were completely exaggerated, that there's no way this could be happening.
Well, I mean, on one level, because there were no signs otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I see it in a weird way.
Well, and apparently several weeks prior to that.
But they don't have a history of lying, so I don't understand
And this is why. So okay. A few weeks prior to that specific occasion where they told their sister, they encountered her again at that same park.
Okay.
But this time they were in the company of 11-year-old Marie, Gertrude's daughter.
Okay. I'm tracking so far.
Yeah. Sylvia said she'd been given a sandwich to eat when she had mentioned to her sister that she was hungry. And so that nothing seemed off at that moment.
Right.
So it's hard to believe that in just a few short weeks you can go from, you know, not saying anything and being happy and saying you have food to all of a sudden this.
Yeah. I mean, I do kind of see where that's...
Yeah. Marie actually told her family about that encounter. And in response, Gertrude accused Sylvia of engaging in gluttony, is what she said.
How is it gluttony? Like,
and then her,
are we going back to like the whole accusations at the stupid church thing? Because I mean, it's the same. It's along the same lines. Like,
yeah, I mean,
much, you did this, you did that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there ever has to be a logic with abusers.
No. I'm just saying. No. I mean, and a lot of the things that she was screaming a lot of times, especially when it came to about like her having a boyfriend, she kept screaming, it's a sin. You know, you can't do this. You know, she was very, I don't want to say fanatical about religion, but she would kind of wield it as a weapon.
Right.
And so after she accused her of engaging in gluttony, Gertrude and Paula choked and beat Sylvia.
Oh my God.
Then they put her in a scalding hot bath to quote unquote cleanse her of her sin.
Aww.
And Gertrude grabbed Sylvia's hair and banged her head against the tub in when she had ended up passing out, and so then she banged her head against the tub to try and wake her up.
Right. That's not how you wake somebody up.
That is not how you wake get up. No.
Like, if you've already made them pass out from hitting their head, hitting it harder or more frequently is not going to counteract that.
Yeah.
It's only going to make it worse.
Exactly. I mean, it's one of these things that's like, yeah, you don't do that. If someone's fainting, you don't be banging their head on things.
No.
So, on or about October 1st, Deanna discovered that Sylvia and Jenny were residing at Gertrude's house. So, she went there to try and get contact with her sisters.
Okay.
Gertrude refused her entrance. She said that she had to get permission from her parents to see her sisters. And then she told her to get off her property.
I mean, that's only a thing if there's, like, a restraining order. Or, like, they've been told no visitors or something.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a thing on a regular basis.
Yeah. 2 weeks later, Deanna stumbled across Jenny on the street, and she asked more about their welfare.
Right.
And she was told by Jenny that, "I can't tell you, you're going to get me in trouble."
And so at this point, we call the police, right? Because that's not creepy and suspicious at all.
Yeah. So we're now going into October.
Okay.
Okay. So there has now been an increase in the frequency and the brutality of the amount of abuse and torture that Sylvia is unfortunately being exposed to.
Aww.
And like I said before, she was gradually becoming incontinent. She,
well, yeah.
She had no control of her bodily functions, which is understandable at this point.
Yeah, given what her body is going through, it's completely understandable.
Yeah. She was denied any kind of access to a bathroom.
And she got in trouble for peeing the bed.
Yes.
And now we're denying her access to a bathroom.
Yeah. And then as a form of punishment because of this, Gertrude would throw Sylvia into the basement, tie her up. And when she was down there, she was often kept naked. She was rarely fed, if ever. She was deprived of water.
Yeah, you can't last long without water.
Yeah, and you're talking in Indiana in October,
and it's cold.
I have family in Indiana, and it was just Halloween, and they had snow on Halloween.
It's cold.
It's cold. And anyone who's ever been in a basement knows they're cold.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't even begin to imagine the pain that she was going through at this point. I mean, if she could even feel pain at this point still.
Well, I mean, unless you're in shock.
She actually does die of shock.
Right. But, I mean,
yeah.
There's always a point before you go into shock like that where you are going to feel it.
Yeah. And sometimes she was even actually tied to the railing of the basement stairs, kind of in the torture rack with, like, your arms up with your toes barely touching the ground.
Oh, yeah.
And she was left there hanging on the basement railing. So it, one occasion, Gertrude actually held a knife to Sylvia and told her, "Fight me back, fight me back." When Sylvia said, "You know, I don't know how to fight," and she's like, "I don't even want to fight you, I don't know how to fight."
Right.
Gertrude stabbed Sylvia's leg.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so, again, we're still having the kids charge 5 cents to come in. And they were charged for the display of Sylvia's body.
The display?
The display.
How old are these kids at this point? I know she's getting closer to, like...
She's 16.
Yeah, she's getting closer to adulthood, but...
Yeah, all the kids were... I think the youngest one involved was about 11, 12.
Oh my God, that's a baby.
Because, I mean, you have to think, she has her own kids involved in this.
I meant the neighborhood kids.
The neighborhood kids. The ones that were charged, I think the oldest was 15.
Still
babies.
That's awfully young.
Yeah, babies.
Not old enough that they could be working a job, so they're not asking mommy and daddy for 5 cents.
Yeah. Gertrude would also, with the assistance of her children and her children's friends, restrain Sylvia, tie her up, put her in a bathtub filled with scalding water, and then literally rub salt into her open wounds.
Ow!
Yeah.
Dude, I cut my finger on a McDonald's Happy Meal box and then got salt in it from a fry and it hurt like hell. By the way, McDonald's boxes, public service announcement, you put them on your finger wrong. I'm not the only one who's done it. My brother's done it too, so...
I've done it on more than one occasion.
Yeah, just saying though. I mean, you get salt in those wounds and it hurts. Like,
yeah. On October 22nd, John was torturing Sylvia by offering her a bowl of soup that she could eat with her fingers and bringing it super close to her and then snatching it away from her.
Okay, so wait, what year was this again? Because now I'm like...
1965.
So, like, 5 cents in 1965. Hold on. Keep talking. I'm going to do some conversions here. Because I just want to know how much that is, you know, with inflation.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious now.
You know, Sylvia is having... she's suffering from extreme malnutrition at this point. She's still trying to eat the food. She's trying to eat that.
Well, yes, because it's self-preservation.
Yeah. Gertrude eventually lets Sylvia go back upstairs and sleep in the room with her sister on the mattress on the floor on the condition that she does not wet herself.
Okay.
And so...
Not that we can control that.
Not that we can control that. Okay. And again, she wets herself.
Okay, so 41 cents in today's money.
Yeah.
But still, like, you have to ask for that. Like,
yeah. And again, one of the things that I mentioned earlier with the Coke bottle.
Right.
This is when the Coke bottle incident actually occurs. It's late in October. Some reports have it earlier, some have it later. And they gave her a Coke bottle and forced her to masturbate with it.
Ah.
In front of the neighborhood kids and family.
Oh, poor baby.
I mean, so she's very young still at this point.
Yeah.
14-year-old, that's who it was. 14-year-old Richard Hobbs is the one that finished the carving. I am a prostitute and proud of it.
At 14?
At 14.
Okay, now I have questions about where he ends up in life.
Yes.
Just because that's an awfully young age to be... Like, that sends up flags to me about where you're going. I mean, yeah.
After they were done... So while they're doing this, because Gertrude couldn't do it, you know, she couldn't get past the first little bit. You know, it was tougher than she thought.
Because needles aren't meant for carving.
Yeah, so she takes Jenny to the grocery store. And leaves the 14-year-old and her 10-year-old to finish it.
Yeah, because let's leave the 14 and 10-year-old in charge. That's going to end well.
They used an anchor bolt to try and burn the letter S beneath Sylvia's breast.
Ow!
And that's what looked like the number three. It was actually supposed to be an S.
Oh, okay.
And they heated up the anchor bolt and tried to basically brand her.
Ow!
Gertrude.
How do they do all this without burning themselves?
Right? I mean, they're 14 and 10. I mean, and at this point, you also have to wonder how much of their own behavior are they really accountable for, because they're being encouraged by the parental figure of Gertrude.
I mean, I freak out when I have to cauterize a needle to deal with, like, a blister or something that I'm going to burn my finger. I've heated up the needle too much and burnt my finger.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I'm an adult. And yeah, I know I'm not supposed to, you know, pop blisters and all that bullshit, but I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, it's like, yeah, no. Like, I get nervous around heated things. But you're leaving a 14-year-old and your 10-year-old there.
I wasn't even allowed to use the stove at 10.
Right? But, and that's why I said, okay, you know, I'm wondering with some of these children, how accountable can we hold them? Because the mom, Gertrude, you know, in the case of the 10-year-old, mommy, and in the case of the 14-year-old, you know, parental figure.
Well, no, not necessarily parental figure. As another adult, but we don't know what the family's relationship was with her.
Yeah.
So we can't say it's a parental figure.
True. But an adult is telling you to do something.
Yeah, but that's an overgeneralization issue. Because at 14...
True.
Like, 14, you're starting to realize, hey, there's shit that adults tell me to do I probably shouldn't do.
And that was actually his defense was, well, Gertie told me to do it.
Yeah, you're past that age where that's going to fly. Like, at 10, yes, that's probably still going to fly because you're still in the early stages of processing that and that developmental stage. But by 14, you're starting to move into that cognitively developing independence and all of that, and you're taking on more responsibility for your actions at that point, unless there's some other medical condition.
Yeah. And we're getting kind of more into the final days of Sylvia Likens at this point. Now, Gertie comes back and she starts taunting Sylvia, saying things like, oh, Sylvia, what are you going to do now? You can't get married. What are you going to do? No one's going to want you.
Typical abuser shit.
Exactly, you know, and Sylvia's just like, there's nothing I can do. So, Sylvia is then taken back eventually to her sister in the room. She tells her sister, she's like, I don't want to die. You know, I don't want to die. But she thinks that it's coming up soon.
Right.
And so now we get into her final days. Gertrude forced her to write a letter to her parents, saying that she went with a gang of boys.
So Gertrude's suspecting too that this is gonna...
Yeah, Gertrude already started formulating a plan in her head to have John Jr. and Jenny blindfold Sylvia, take her down to a little wooded area and leave her there to die.
So then who's she gonna abuse after that? Because...
Exactly. When Sylvia finished writing the letters, she was tied to the stairs again and offered some crackers. And she straight up refused to eat the crackers. She said, you know, give it to the dog. I don't want it. Gertrude then shoved them into her mouth, and her and John beat her, particularly around the stomach area.
And how old was John at this point?
John is... Let me look at my notes here. John is 12.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. On the 25th, Sylvia tries to escape because she hears a conversation that Gertrude is having with someone about her plan of abandoning her to just die. So she tries to run out the front door, but because of her injuries and weakness, Gertrude catches her.
Right. She's not going to get very far because she doesn't have the energy.
No. So Coy, who was Stephanie's boyfriend.
Coy, like the fish?
Coy Hubbard. Yep.
Okay. Who names their kid after? I'm not going to say that. I'm sorry. I'm sure there's others out there. It just surprises me because that's a new one for me.
Yeah. So Gertrude gives Sylvia some toast. But because of her extreme dehydration, she can't eat it.
Right.
You know, so Gertrude, again, you know, just shoves it and force feeds it to her. Then she takes a curtain rod and starts beating her with it. Particularly around the face until the rod itself was bent at right angles.
Oh, and this is like a metal curtain rod, I'm assuming. Yes. Not like the cheapo rods that sometimes, you know, pop up.
Yes. That evening, Sylvia tried to scream for help. She was hitting the walls with a spade. One neighbor would tell police that she heard the commotion and identified where it was coming from, but that it ceased about 3 o'clock in the morning. And so she decided not to bother the police.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
I feel like that's something that would have constituted a police phone call.
Right. October 26th, Sylvia is unable to speak or coordinate movements of her limbs.
Because there's probably some brain damage.
Yes. She became very delirious. She was moaning and mumbling. Paula asked her to say the alphabet. She couldn't even get past the first four letters. And so Paula threatened Sylvia. She would jump on her, and when Sylvia had defecated herself, she was ordered to clean herself up.
Which she's probably not able to do at this point.
Yeah. So more of the neighborhood kids come over, and she was asked to identify them, and she does. She goes, "You're Ricky, you're Gertie." And Gertie's like, "Shut up, I know who I am."
Well, aren't you just a bundle of roses?
Yeah, she was very, very delirious, not being able to do a lot of things. She was trying to exit the basement. She stumbled on the stairs constantly. Gertie decided, you know, she grabs Sylvia and throws her in the bathtub again. After, she jumps on her head for a little bit.
Jumps on her head?
Jumps on her head. She...
What was the... not that there's any purpose to anything, but that's like the most random...
I do not know. She tells Stephanie to give her a bath. And she does in warm, soapy water. But Sylvia has stopped breathing. Stephanie does try to... apply CPR and mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, but she was not able to get her back, and she died, unfortunately, there. Gertrude then tells Richard Hobbs, the boy who carved the words into her, to go and call the police.
Now we call the police.
Yes. They come in. They find Sylvia emaciated, bludgeoned, mutilated. And so she hands them a letter that she forced Sylvia to write that said, "Oh, well, she was raped by a gang of guys. And, you know, oh, well, Gertrude was trying to heal her."
Yeah, heal her.
Yeah. While she was clutching a Bible, Paula... she told all present at the house that Sylvia's death was meant to happen. She then looked over at Jenny and said, "If you want to live with us, Jenny, we'll treat you like our own sister."
Oh, Lord.
"Or if you still want to live with us." So no one is willing to say anything different from what the story Gertie has told him, but Jenny does eventually tell the police, if you get me out of here, I'll tell you what really happened.
Right, because she's like, I can't tell you, and then go back there.
Yeah. At the autopsy, it revealed that Sylvia had an excess of 150 separate wounds across her entire body, in addition to being extremely emaciated at the time of her death. The wounds varied in location, severity, stage of healing, things of that nature. She had severe bruising, burns, muscle and nerve damage. Her vaginal cavity was almost completely swollen shut, despite the fact that her hymen was still present.
Oh my Lord.
All of her fingernails were broken and backwards. The most
broken and backwards?
And backwards.
I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, most of the external layers of skin upon her face, breast, neck, and right knee area had been peeled or had rescinded completely. And right as she was dying, apparently, Sylvia had bitten through her lips, partially severing them from her face.
Ow. Although she probably didn't realize it, but still, ow.
Yeah. So, all in all, Gertrude, Paula, John, Richard Hobbs, and Coy Hubbard were charged with her death.
Were they charged as adults or as children, though? Just out of curiosity.
So, where did it go? Gotta find it. I believe they were all charged as adults.
Okay.
Or no, John. I don't believe John or Richard were. I think maybe Coy was, but I think he also took a plea deal.
Right.
So Gertrude was found guilty of first degree murder with a sentence of life in prison. Paula was found guilty of second degree murder. Hobbs, Hubbard, and John were found guilty of manslaughter.
Okay.
Gertrude and Paula were formally sentenced to life in prison, while Richard, Coy, and John each received sentences of 2 to 21 years to be served.
Okay.
In 1970, Indiana Supreme Court reversed the convictions of Gertrude and Paula on the basis that the judge had repeatedly denied motions by their defense counsel for a change of venue and separate trials.
I can see that. It's probably less for Gertrude, more for...
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, at that point, you're lumping him in with her, and that's a totally different scenario.
But it's only for Paula and Gertrude. So, the daughter and Gertrude.
Right, but because they have the same trial, they're going to get very similar sentences.
Exactly.
It's probably more for Paula's benefit than Gertrude's. Yeah. Because she may have gotten a lesser sentence if she had been tried by herself.
Yeah, and they were retried in 1971. But this time, Paula actually pled guilty to voluntary manslaughter rather than face that retrial. So she was sentenced to a term of 2 to 21 years in prison.
Okay.
Despite having tried to escape prison twice unsuccessfully, she was released from prison in 1972.
She tried, but she failed.
Yes.
But she tried again.
Yes. Gertrude was convicted again, however, and
she went to trial again?
She went to trial again. She decided to take her chances, and she was sentenced to life again.
Idiot.
Yeah. She did, however, receive parole.
What?
She was released from prison in 1985.
What?
Yep. She relocated to Iowa. She never accepted full responsibility. She kept trying to... She says that she doesn't recall any of her actions against Sylvia. And she died at the age of 61 in 1990. When Jenny, the sister, read the obituary, she actually clipped it out and sent it to her mother with a note saying, "Oh, good old Gertie's dead. I needed some good news."
I mean, after everything she went through, like, I totally get where she was coming from with that.
Yeah. But that was the torture of Sylvia Likens. Mm-hmm. And they have a memorial dedicated to her in a park that she used to play in. The house has been bulldozed and is now a church parking lot.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is nobody wanted to buy it.
No, nobody wanted anything to do with the house. And it's still considered, like I said at the beginning, Hoosiers still consider it one of the worst cases they've ever had in their state.
Yeah.
So, that's the story of Sylvia Likens.
So, are you ready for our fun little factoid?
Yes, give me a factoid.
So, inside of Yellowstone National Park, there's a place called the Zone of Death.
The Zone of Death. I like where this is going already.
So, it was discovered by a law professor named Brian C. Colt, who was at Michigan State University, when he was planning to write an essay about technicalities in the Sixth Amendment, which entitles Citizens to a Fair and Quick Trial. So he wondered what hypothetical places were there that was not, like, there wasn't enough citizens to get, like, a jury for a fair trial, or that, like, no trial could actually take place, or no punishment for major crimes could come in that area. And he, like, starting out, I don't think he thought there was really a place. But then he discovered that there was a place, and it's the Idaho section of Yellowstone Park. So the loophole is this. The court district governing Wyoming is currently the only court district in the U.S. that can have jurisdiction over land in other states. So this is due to the fact that Yellowstone National Park actually includes parts of Wyoming, Idaho, and Montana. And so it's considered part of the Wyoming judicial district. So any criminal discovered to have committed a crime in that district would usually be sent to Cheyenne, Wyoming. For trial.
Okay.
However, the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution decrees that trial must happen both within the district and the state for where the crime was committed. So because of this, that means crimes committed within the zone of death, which is like this little section, right, would constitutionally be required to be tried in that area and include jury members from that area. The problem is there's this area of Yellowstone in Idaho that is uninhabited, so a jury cannot be assembled. And so, in theory, a criminal would not be able to have a fair trial. And that means they could not also receive legal punishment for a major crime.
No, this is not us advocating anything here.
No, this is an essay that has been put out there already. Like, when he found it, like, he was horrified when he found this. Like, he was like, I did not.
Someone needs to close that loophole, please.
So he shifted his focus in the essay about the area to persuade the government to fix this loophole.
Yeah.
The essay is actually called The Perfect Crime. It was published in 2005 in the Georgetown Law Journal. So it's out there for whoever wants to go find it. He feared that criminals might read the essay and then go commit a crime in that area.
Yeah.
Like, that was his fear. So after he discovered the loophole, though, he tried to work to have the government close it. He suggested that lawmakers in Wyoming have the zone of death be included as part of the nearest Idaho judicial district. However, the Wyoming district, or that would allow the Wyoming district to fix the issue. However, lawmakers ignored his suggestion. In 2007, a book was written called Free Fire that featured the zone, which Box hoped would increase government awareness, which was the author. The novel did succeed in alerting Wyoming Senator Mike Enzi to the issue. However, Enzi was unable to convince Congress to discuss it. So no known felonies have ever been committed in the zone of death since Colt's discovery. However, a poacher named Michael Beldarian illegally shot an elk in the Montana section of Yellowstone. And while that section of the park does have enough residents to have a jury, it might be difficult to put one together due to the travel unwillingness of members, because it's a really small population. So a judge ruled that Valdaria would be tried in the nearest Montana district rather than the sparsely populated Wyoming district. Valdarian cited Colt's paper, actually, to explain why he believed it was illegal to have his trial conducted in a different district than where the crime was committed. The judge disagreed, and then Valdarian basically, instead of like pushing it any further, just pled guilty. So neither district actually had to deal with the problem. But the paper was actually cited in court as
that. I mean, if nothing else, that should wake some people up to we have a problem
here. We have this little acre of land that I think it's only like 50 acres. Like, it's not a big section of Yellowstone.
Yeah, it's not in comparison to the rest of Yellowstone.
Right, it's small. Not. But at the same time, like, this paper's been out there now since 2005.
Yeah. I'm surprised more people haven't
heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I guess that's a good thing that they haven't heard about it.
On one hand, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a lot of lawyers have heard of it.
Right? It's like, oh, I hope I don't get a case like that. Unless you're a defense lawyer and you're like, oh, I wish I do.
I mean, I just, no, it wouldn't be the defense, it would be the prosecution probably hoping for it at that point, because it's never been brought up and it's probably going to get squashed pretty darn quickly.
Yeah, it would need to be handled and set precedents about it and then close that damn loophole.
Right, but then, you know, at that point, like, it's probably going to get closed very quickly if they ever tried to use it, because like I said, the judge disagreed with the interpretation anyway when it was tried to use in another instance. Like, no, we do have jurisdiction to move this to another venue because we can't. And that didn't go to trial. Like, no one pressed that issue. But I think if it was pressed, like, that lawyer that presses that issue better have his shit together.
Because I mean, otherwise, you're talking about that $10,000 or, you know, the $10,000 an hour lawyer.
Yeah, but everybody's going to know. So if you fail at that, everyone is going to know you are the one who tried to uphold the zone of death loophole.
I mean, you'll be the zone of death lawyer for the rest of your
career. Yeah, no, there's no way.
If not that. Even your natural born life.
Right?
And who knows, maybe in the afterlife too.
Who knows? So next week I am going to talk about the Enfield haunting.
Okay.
Which took place in England. I'm trying to pick ones that you poke holes in, but like, again, this is another one where like there were a lot of holes. So
we like holy things.
Apparently. But a little wombat asked for it, so we're going to do it.
Aw, our little wombat?
Yeah.
Aw, yay.
So, I mean, we're going to do it. So, regardless of if we poke holes in it or not,
yeah,
like, we're going to do it.
Sounds like.
So, that's the next episode.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for listening. As always, follow us on Twitter at Walk Weird. We're also on Facebook. Leave us messages, comments, you know, send in requests. We will always give you proper recognition when we use them.
Yep.
So, yeah, we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.